This is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the top U.S. diplomat suggests warplanes should not fly over Syria.
The officers gave loud, clear, verbal commands, which were also heard by many of the witnesses.
More tension in the streets following a fatal police shooting. Also ahead, an American to go on trial in China for espionage. A key U.S. interest rate sends stocks higher. And a court decision on the death of Whitney Houston's daughter. It's all on International Edition. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry told the United Nations Wednesday if a ceasefire deal in Syria is to be salvaged, warplanes must stop flying over key parts of the country.
The future of Syria is hanging by a thread, and I urge this council not to give up, but instead to support the steps outlined by the United States and Russia in Geneva. And I call on every party in Syria and those who support them. I call on all members of the opposition to cooperate and revive this plan.
Kerry said he wanted to emphasize to Russia that Washington still supports finding a diplomatic solution. Meanwhile, an airstrike last night near Aleppo, Syria, killed at least four medical workers, employees of the Union of Medical Care and Relief Organizations. The bombing occurred a day after an international aid convoy was hit by airstrikes, killing at least 20. The United States believes Russia is responsible for that attack, but Moscow has denied it. Dr. Kalasawa is the CEO of UOSSM, USA, and Sarah Williams, my colleague, asked her about what is known about the circumstances surrounding the airstrike that killed the healthcare workers.
Yesterday, about 10:30 or 11, probably around 10:30, our ambulance was dispatched to this. There was a medical emergency point in the southern part of Aleppo. We have ambulatory systems, or dispatches, if you want to call them, that are working in the area and also in the area of Idlib as well. And we worked in partnership with WHO. Our ambulatory dispatch are usually called to the scenes of where, you know, there's bombing, or they're called to medical points to triage patients because they can't be treated in the area to be transferred to the hospital. So from our staff on the ground, they were dispatched. And two drivers, basically two ambulances, and you have two drivers for that, and three of our nurses was in those two ambulances. On the arrival, it looks like the medical point was airstrike, and we lost our four members, our four staff, including two drivers and two nurses. And the fifth one that was in critical condition was triaged to our hospital at the Syrian-Turkish border, Bab el-Hawa Hospital, but it was in critical condition that was transferred to Turkey.
Is it known who was responsible for the airstrike?
We don't know. I mean, the airstrike was so severe. It looks like the medical point itself was three stories. And my understanding from the staff on the ground that two was above the ground and one, you know, like a basement or underground. And because of the intensity of the strike, the whole building went down. But we don't know exactly who is responsible for the airstrike.
And I'm sure that area has been, you know, just hit so much just within the recent days and weeks.
Yes. And not only that area. In general, the Aleppo city, even from the northern part, the western part of. So really the area, the whole Aleppo, I could say province area, from the south, from the north, from the west, have been targeted repeatedly within the last few months by airstrikes and barrels.
Dr. Kalasawa, the CEO of the Union of Medical Care and Relief Organizations, USA. It's time now for us to turn to our social media segments. And with that, G. Abby Lee joins me here in Studio 22 with what's trending online. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
It looks like troubled media outlet Gawker has a new name as of Wednesday. Mm-hmm. What's the online community saying about that?
You're absolutely right. Gawker is now called Gizmodo Media and also has a new leader. For overseas listeners, it's an online publication focusing on celebrities and the media industry. News Corp's Raju Narisity is now the new CEO of Gizmodo Media Group, taking over duties from Nick Denton, who was the CEO of Gawker Media Group. Narisity is on Twitter at Raju, that's R-A-J-U, and simply wrote, "This and shared a link to the company's press release about the leadership change. Notable reporters are tweeting congratulations to Naricity, including Jim Roberts of formerly Mashable, Reuters, and the New York Times. I didn't know this, but he's currently the consulting editor for The Hill.
Okay.
Kind of dubious title, if you ask
yes.
me.
Yes. Well, let's turn to tech news. Mm-hmm. We talked a lot about the new iPhone 7 and the Samsung Note 7, but you're saying that there's a new phone on the market.
That's right. It's a good old, by which I mean new, Nokia phone. It may surprise some listeners, but Microsoft is still making Nokia phones.
Wow.
The software giant unveiled its latest Nokia 216 feature phone Wednesday, and the new handset will be available in India next month for, guess this, around $37. When I read it, I was like, am I missing a zero? Twitter users are joking that for such a low price, it even has a headphone jack. And that's, of course, referring to the new iPhone 7 and iPhone 7 Plus that do not come with a headphone jack.
Okay, well, probably shouldn't drop it in the water, at
least.
No,
not really.
Well, last but not least, people are talking about kittens. One of your favorite topics.
That's
What's
right.
all this about?
It's about an infection that could be life-threatening. The finding is based on a new study by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in the U.S. The symptoms of the cat scratch disease can range anywhere from intense fever to death if there are complications involved. But many cat lovers and scientists are calling it a scare tactic by the media outlets and the government because the likelihood of the infection leading to death is minuscule. So you can continue to take care of your cat. That's all for me today, Jim.
Okay, your homework is to go look up the 40-year-old song by Ted Nugent.
I'll try that.
Thanks for the wrap-up, G. You can follow us on Twitter at VOA _IE or our own individual accounts at VOA Stevenson and at G. Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, human rights group ridicules bloggers' quote, fun North Korean vacation. Afghan peace process hopes to build momentum. Vietnam sentences 9 to death for heroin trafficking. Bangladesh ferry sunk by collapsing riverbank. Taiwan asks Google to blur images showing new South China Sea facilities. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at our voanews.com website. And if you have a smartphone, check out our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. China plans to try American businesswoman Sandy Fan Gillis on espionage charges sometime next month, but her husband in Houston, Texas, says he has evidence that she was not even in China on one of the dates cited in the indictment. As VOA's Greg Flakes reports from Houston, Jeff Gillis remains determined to see his wife freed.
These demonstrators outside the Chinese consulate in Houston are demanding the release of Sandy Fan Gillis. The Chinese-Vietnamese-American businesswoman has been in jail in China for more than a year, accused of spying. Most of her supporters are people who have known her for some time.
I'm here because I want my mom home. I want her to be back and not be accused of something that she's never done.
It's a shame to be in such a predicament because, truly, I don't think she did anything wrong.
The trial was set for this week, but Chinese authorities delayed its start. Husband Jeff Gillis sees some benefit in this.
Having some more time for the defense lawyers is a good thing. The fact that they've scheduled an evidentiary hearing is a good thing because there's all kinds of evidence that we have that we want to make sure gets into trial.
He says he can prove that his wife was not even in China in 1996 when her accusers say she was spying.
We have abundant evidence that Sandy was in Houston at the time. We have the evidence of her passport, which has no China visa in 1996, no exit stamps, no entry stamps.
Local businessman Justin Gardner never met Sandy, but was moved to join her cause when he read of her husband's lonely battle.
It broke my heart that, you know, this guy's really been running this for the most part by himself.
Using his business contacts, Gardner hopes to increase support.
Then the court of public opinion will demand that the individuals who have the power here in the States to put pressure on those who have the power in China to do what's right and send her home.
But U.S. influence on China is limited as the two nations spar over a variety of issues that overshadow one woman's predicament. Jeff Gillis recognizes the difficulty of getting a fair trial.
It is still a secret trial. It's going to be closed. There's nobody that's going to be allowed besides Sandy and the defense lawyers.
China has shown no sign it will drop the case, nor will it allow U.S. embassy officials to attend the trial. Greg Flakus, VOA News, Houston.
And be sure to check out great video with that story at our website, voanews.com. Law enforcement agencies in Charlotte, North Carolina, are bracing for the possibility of more street protests as they continue to investigate the fatal shooting of an African-American man by a black police officer. Protesters clashed with police and shut down a major highway late Tuesday and early Wednesday after 43-year-old Keith Lamont Scott was killed. He was shot by a plainclothes police officer who was looking for a criminal suspect in an apartment complex. The local police chief, Kerr Putney, said Scott got out of a car holding a gun, but Scott's family strongly disputes the claim. They say he was holding a book when he was shot. Kerr Putney said officers gave Scott multiple warnings to drop a handgun before fatally shooting him.
The officers gave loud, clear, verbal commands, which were also heard by many of the witnesses. They were instructing the subject, once he got out of the vehicle, to drop the weapon. In spite of the verbal commands, Mr. Scott, as I said, exited his vehicle armed with a handgun as the officers continued to yell at him to drop it. He stepped out, posing a threat to the officers, and Officer Brentley Vinson subsequently fired his weapon, striking the subject.
Kerr Putney said 16 officers were injured and multiple police vehicles were damaged during the protests and urged citizens to look at the facts.
It's time to change the narrative, because I can tell you from the facts that the story is a little bit different as to how it's been portrayed so far, especially through social media.
Scott was one of an estimated 702 people who have been shot dead by law enforcement officers in the United States this year, according to the Washington Post, which says 163 of the victims were African American men. U.S. economic officials held the key interest rate steady Wednesday at near record low level. Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen.
The decision not to raise rates today and to wait for some further evidence that we're continuing on this course is largely based on the judgment that we're not seeing evidence that the economy is overheating and that we are seeing evidence that people are being drawn in larger numbers than at least I would have expected into the labor market, and that that's healthy to continue, but that nevertheless, we do need to be forward-looking, and if we continue along this course, it likely will be appropriate to raise the federal funds rate.
Many experts interpret keeping the rate steady as a signal the U.S. Federal Reserve may boost interest rates in December. VOA financial correspondent Jill Malandrino joins us from New York with how markets reacted to the Fed decision.
We saw the market pop initially about 5-6 points in the S&P 500 following the announcement that the Fed wasn't going to raise interest rates, which was largely expected. So kind of goes back to bad news is now good news. Since then, we've seen the market pull back into where it was trading before the announcement, about 4.5 points up on the S&P. The conversation now is going to shift to, will we get a rate hike in November or December? Analysts and traders I speak with think that we're looking at December most likely. They don't think that we're going to get a change in monetary policy so close around the election and at the tail end of earnings season. So 50% in December and certainly something in 2017.
A lot of people, too, were watching Japan's central bank, and they decided to leave their interest rates at just below zero.
Right. And I think we're going to continue to see Japan keep their monetary policy easy. I think if anyone's going to make a move to the more hawkish side or raise interest rates, it's going to be us first, with Europe and then Asia maybe to follow. But for right now, they're going to take cues on what the U.S. market is doing.
Jill Malandrino in New York. Jill, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
U.S. financial markets closed about 1% higher. Central bankers use low interest rates to boost economic growth and higher interest rates to temper high inflation or unrealistic stock values. In this presidential campaign season, there has been some discussion of how politics might be affecting the Federal Reserve's view of the economy. But Fed Chair Janet Yellen flatly dismissed the assertion Wednesday.
Well, I think Congress very wisely established the Federal Reserve as an independent agency in order to insulate monetary policy from short-term political pressures. And I can say emphatically that partisan politics plays no role in our decisions about the appropriate stance of monetary policy. We are trying to decide what the best policy is to foster price stability and maximum employment and to manage the variety of risks that we see as affecting the outlook. We do not discuss politics at our meetings, and we do not take politics into account in our decisions.
Central bank officials in Washington, Tokyo, and elsewhere are coping with slowdowns in global growth and international trade, according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. You can follow all the latest on this and many other stories at our website, voanews.com. And while you're online, be sure to follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE and like us on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This is VOA's International Edition. A judge in Atlanta, Georgia, has found Nick Gordon legally responsible for the death of his girlfriend, Bob Christina Brown. She was the daughter of the late Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the ruling, which is part of a lawsuit filed against Gordon last year.
Now, this is part of a $40 million wrongful death civil suit that Bobby Christina Brown's estate has brought against Nick Gordon, who, as you mentioned, is being called Bobby Christina's boyfriend. There were some rumors that they were engaged or married, but Nick Gordon is actually the young man that was brought into the family by Whitney Houston when he was only 12 years old. So Nick Gordon and Bobby Christina actually grew up as brother and sister, and then sort of formed this really strange relationship after Whitney passed away.
And Bobby Christina was found unresponsive in a bathtub in January of 2015, but she didn't die until like 6 months later or something like that. But right. The accusation in this case is that Nick Gordon is the one who gave her drugs and what they call a toxic cocktail that led to her death.
Yeah, that's what the Brown estate is alleging, that the story goes they had a huge fight. He was upset with her and accused her of cheating, called her some names. They got into a fight. He physically assaulted her and then gave her this cocktail, this toxic cocktail of drugs and alcohol to calm her down. And then they are also alleging, or it was written, that she went into some kind of shock, and then he put her in a cold tub of water. And as a result, she passed away. So it took some time for them to determine the actual cause of death. And they decided that it was drug intoxication and immersion in water, but they could not determine whether or not it was intentional or if it were accidental. And so that's what this whole civil case was about. Now, also, I think it's important to mention that there have been no criminal charges brought against Nick Gordon because the medical examiner could not determine whether or not it was accidental or intentional.
And this kind of has echoes. Bobby Christina's death, I remember, kind of had echoes of her mom's death. Her mom also died in a bathtub before the Grammys a few years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And so if Nick Gordon, now Nick Gordon is not wealthy. I mean, if how can you sue somebody for $40 million if he doesn't have any money?
Well, you know, and that's the big question. You don't know. I mean, I guess they could probably find a way. I mean, he's going to have to earn money at some point. Now, I don't think, and I don't know this for a fact, I don't think they can put him in jail. There's no such thing as sort of like a debtor's prison here in the state. So he can't necessarily be locked up. But any money that he makes from this point forward, if the jury, because the jury will be the one to determine how much Nick Gordon will have to pay, any money that he makes from this point forward will have to be used toward the payment of the settlement, whatever that may be. I think it's safe to assume it probably won't be $40 million. And I think the Brown family knows very well that he doesn't have that, but they're making a point here.
All right. That is VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee. We'd love to hear your comments on this. You can send her a tweet. She is at VOA Lady DJ or at VOA One The Hits. You can also log on to our webpage, voanews.com. That's where you'll find her show, The Soul Lounge. And you can send us a tweet if you'd like. We're at VOA underscore IE.
Been listening to International Edition, and as David mentioned, you can follow us on Twitter at VOA underscore IE, or just go to our website, voanews.com. You'll find all of our programs there to listen to or download as you like. And speaking of like, stop by Facebook. VOA Now is the place to go. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Political violence has ravaged the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo in recent days. Several dozen people have reportedly been killed in protests that erupted September 19th in Kinshasa against the efforts of President Joseph Kabila to remain in power beyond the end of his mandate this December. The United States is disappointed by the Democratic Republic of the Congo Electoral Commission's failure to announce an elections calendar today, as called for by the DRC Constitution, said U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby in a statement issued September 19th. Mr. Kirby said the U.S. condemns all violence and calls upon all Congolese stakeholders to exercise restraint and avoid provocation, while reiterating that the DRC government has the primary responsibility for protecting human rights, including the right to peaceful assembly and freedom of expression. These tragic events, he noted, underscore the need for a truly inclusive dialogue process aimed at reaching consensus on holding presidential elections as soon as technically feasible and guaranteeing the country's first democratic transition of power. In addition, Mr. Kirby stated, the United States believes that any individuals who are responsible for perpetrating violence or repression should be held accountable and remains ready to impose additional targeted sanctions. The United States continues to work with the DRC government, the political opposition, civil society, and the international community for a resolution that will address the concerns and interests of the Congolese people who deserve a lasting peace. As a start, the United States government has called upon the DRC government to publicly promise that elections will be held next year, leading to the country's first democratic transition.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.